it's not like
yeah,
that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's wonderful to see everybody today. We have the our good friend Dale. The most of you, if you come around here, you always see Dale and Yvonne because they're our faithful friends. I was very delighted when I got him to agree to give a talk. Dale has, after he finished his bachelor's in the early 60s, he spent 10 years as a Protestant missionary in West Africa, was a teacher and pastor after that. He and Yvonne lived in Jerusalem in the mid to late 80s, where they finished their graduate studies, and at the Institute of the Holy Institute of Holy Land Studies, which became Jerusalem University College. And he stayed on there to be director of their short-term program. He has written various articles on geography and archaeology. He and Yvonne did a couple of short-term teaching assignments in Bulgaria, through which they became Orthodox in 2001. And until recently, he had been an adjunct professor at Fuller in Hebrew and Historical Geography. And he's, those of you who are from St. Timothy's know this, he's on the church council there, and he's part of the team that does the adult and catechumen studies. And I am just waiting to hear what you have to say, so thank you for coming.
Last Sunday, our deacon John Gibbs began his homily with, "I feel a little at ease trying to address holiness, and yet we're so privileged to be close to it." And that's the way I feel after having tried to filter the early monastics in Palestine through an academic filter. You come out with something you still can't handle or get your mind around. And this is by no means something that is comprehensive, but I trust that there will be a couple of things that you will be able to take home with you, and that in the world there is a lot of noise. And going to the desert to find silence is not something new. Or finding, as Jesus said to his disciples, "Come away with me to a lonely place by yourselves." Because he said that you don't even have time to eat. And that's the way the world drives us, doesn't it? And so as we look at these individuals who went to the desert to be in silence in the conversation that they were so hungering for in their hearts with the Lord. And there is a side to this that is sort of like the rest of the story, because the world they left and the world they entered was diametrically opposite. And so we're going to look at these individuals. Just when we start, the equipment takes a rest. There we go. It'll come up. St. Isaac of Nineveh, or St. Isaac of the Syrian, is quoted by Father Theodore in Word Magazine years ago. "Without silence, St. Isaac teaches the Christian experience remains anemic. Without the intense intimacy with God, the repentance, the spiritual calm, or the wonder that should characterize it, Christian life without silence becomes flat and lacks richness." But St. Isaac, in specific, says, you know, if you pile up on one side of the scales all the rest of spiritual efforts and practices, St. Isaac tells us, and on the other side, silence, you will find that the latter outweighs them all. Why does inward calm so elude us? Perhaps St. Isaac of Syria tells us why. Perhaps it's because we have not cultivated enough silence in our lives. Everybody wants our attention. The media wants our attention. And it's difficult sometimes to tune them out. Where are we going to go for some silence? This essentially is a story of four ascetics who found themselves leaving their home countries, especially Cappadocia, Damascus, and Armenia, and they went to the Judean desert. Saint Euthymius the Great from Melitene, and now it's called, I think, Mataya, and Saint Theodosius from Cremona, Saint Sabas from Caesarea, all in central Turkey, and Saint Sophronius from Damascus. We have a map here to give to everybody. Sister Mary, if you could pass these out. You'll get a couple of things. One is this map of the Middle East, the Levant, all the way over here to the Persian Gulf. But in particular, a southeastern part of Turkey in which we find the ancient Lycia and Cappadocia. And we're going to be focusing on this area of the map and also Damascus at the conclusion. Also, every once in a while, somebody has a question, where did you get that? Well, this is a short bibliography of references and texts from which we have drawn. And also, I'd like to alert you to the fact that the lives of these people have been recounted in several volumes. These are the two ancient volumes from the 5th, 6th century. We have the lives of the monks of Palestine by one Cyril of Skitopolis, or Beit Shan, now in Israel. He knew some of these individuals personally, and as a young man began to write their biographies. And one that we will mention in association with St. Saba, a cohort, John Moschus, who wrote this book when they were in exile from the Persians on the monastic practices of those monasteries they visited, from Scetus to St. Minas's monastery and in Alexandria, and also back in Palestine. And then there are a couple more recent. There was Chi, in particular, in the late 20s and early 30s, while in England doing graduate work, was looking for a topic. And it's funny how graduate students look for topics because they don't have any idea of what they should do. But this is a splendid, sterling idea. And it's the desert a city. And the Judean desert literally became a city in one sense as he went through all of the ancient records because of his classical education and wrote this as a thesis that later became a full-blown account of those early monks. And then to celebrate 1,000 years of the faith in Russia, there was a series of books that were written on the Theotokos, Mothers of the Faith, Pillars of Orthodoxy, and the Saints of the Holy Land and the Sinai Desert. And so these are all presently in print and are very affordable in comparison to those heavy reference books that have been printed more recently because of the new archaeology that has revealed a lot to us. We have these four monks that have caught our attention. And here is Palestine, and we'll see a little enlargement of this later in a few minutes. But we have several cities up here in eastern Turkey. This actually a part of Armenia at that time. And this is where Saint Euthemius came from. He is here in these highland mountains. Then next came Saint Theodosius from in Cappadocia in Mogarissos or Comana. And then Saint Sabas from Caesarea and Saint Sophronius from Damascus, where he came down here to the desert. This is a little closer look at major localities in Palestine during the Roman period. It was called Palestina Segunda. Syria was the primary Palestine territory. Then this area here was Palestine II, and the Sinai was Palestine III, as far as, you know, civil jurisdictions were concerned. But here we have another enlargement of the Dead Sea. This is where the Dead Sea Qumran community and the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. But we have Jericho, very familiar name for us, Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Tekoa, Hebron, and Amman, Jordan, then called Philadelphia. But this area, you'll see in a minute, is very, very desolate and very alone. We have several deserts that are named in some of the early documents. How many have read an account of Father Zosimus and the life of Saint Mary of Egypt? He went during Lent for a 40-day sojourn into the desert. This was a monastic given. If you were physically able, you went into the desert. Well, Father Zosimus took off from here near Jericho and then came across and went off the map into northern Arabia. How long were these sojourns, or Lenten sojourns? 40 days. And then they would come back to their monastery for Holy Week on Palms, beginning with Palm Sunday. God bless her. Saint Mary of Egypt was out there 48 years in the silence. Well, our monastic saints would go for 40 days. In any case, we have them mentioning the desert of Kutila, the desert of Ruba, but we know that there were many others, the desert of Kapar Baiha, Ma'on, the desert of Arad, the desert of Faizel, the desert of the Lishan, this area right here, opposite Masada, and the desert of Macarius, which is mentioned in the texts. So there were several arenas in which they would go for total silence and to be alone. Now, we're talking about monasteries from which they're coming. They may be several types that we run across. One is a cenobitic monastery where there are residential provisions for everyone, much like you are here. This would be a cenobitic monastery, a cenobia. But then there were others who stayed in their cells in the caves, and we're going to talk about one like that, Saint Saba. Maybe some of you know it as Mar Saba in the Palestinian desert of Judea. These anchorite or loras or lavras, that's pronounced a couple of different ways. The Romans and the Greeks sometimes changed their script, you might say, and it's pronounced Lavra or Laura. Israeli scholars call it Laura, L-A-U, instead of L-A-V-R-A. But that's where you live in your own cell. And in your cell, you work, you pray, you study, you sleep. But then for the weekend, Saturday and Sundays, you go together to the Lavra or the Laura. And there together, you worship, receive the mysteries, and you are in fellowship, you bake bread, and then take your loaf of bread back to your cell for the next week. But then we have hermits, much like St. Mary of Egypt. They don't have a cell. They may have a cell, but they don't have and are not attached to a lavra. But then there are stylites, who you find them as ascetics on the top of a 20-foot pillar, and they're called stylites. But we're talking about these four people who are sort of a mixture of cenobitic and anchorite, to where they have a central church and bakery that they come together on the weekends for the celebration of the mysteries as they all receive together. There are parts to a desert. There are those fringe areas, like here, where the soil, rather red, as you can see up here, is decomposed Cenomanian limestone, and it's fertile. It can hold moisture. And as a result, there can be, like you see during certain times of the year, some grazing for sheep. But then you continue on into the desert, and you're in the desert proper. And this is a desert plateau of the Judean desert right here. It's very different from this, isn't it? This is the fringe up close to the hill country in the watershed area, but then the water depletes and there is nothing. And then there is this area, an earthquake fault line, where the plateau just falls off into the Dead Sea, off to the right. And it's into this area that the monastics went to establish, first living sometimes for 10 years or more in a natural cave, and then finding a more permanent place, and we will mention some of these more permanent locations of these monks that we're talking about. Here we have all three. We have the hill country and the watershed area, and that's where the fringe area is that falls down into the desert plateau, and then the fault that drops off into the Dead Sea. Questions? Or are you going to just let me keep going?
Would they like go directly to a particular location, or would they keep moving around?
And those that we're talking about, they, when they finally had finished some apprenticeship or time with a teacher, some of them of which they had in mind, like St. Euthemius was, even in his day, referred to as Euthemius the Great, rare among the monastics to be called that. We know that St. Theodosius, as well as St. Saba, went with the intention of going to his monastery. But because they were too young and didn't have a beard, they were sent over to St. Theosistus, who St. Theodosius had helped build that monastery, and they were there. We're at living, we're going off script. These two young men, even though they were separated by 16 years each, had a monastic experience that surpassed a lot of people, even at a young age. And by 18, they already had been readers, some of them for years. Not only readers, which acquainted them with the scriptures, they had the Psalms memorized. And yet, because they didn't have a beard, they had to go over to St. Theostistus's monastery in order to prepare for the disciplines and the rigors of a full monastic commitment.
But the 40-day sojourns, were those to one specific location, or did they keep moving around in the desert from place to place?
From Father Zosimus and also others, we know that it didn't have to be a particular itinerary that was set up for them, or that it was what they did last year. They could go, and in particular, Father Zosimus, God bless him, he wanted to find a man who could teach him something about asceticism he didn't know. And what did he end up with? On his face, asking and begging St. Mary to pray for him. No, Father Zosimus, pray for me. Oh no, you pray for me. And finally she conceded, and when it went on and on and on, he looked up and she had elevated above the ground in prayer for Father Zosimus. You know, this, I can't get my head around some of this, you know, but it's providential. I'm being forced to, I'm sure. And the desert in particular, there wasn't reservations that you could make. In fact, Father Zosimus commented that it was the custom, if you saw someone by chance, you would go the other way. And so you would avoid each other during the Lenten